You are in a long, gray corridor. Concrete floor and cinder block walls. Where could this place be? Deep beneath some enormous compound? Why are you here? Every 20 or 30 yards, there's another fluorescent light where the ceiling, which is very low, meets the wall. You look far ahead into the gloom and see an infinite tunnel of deep shadows broken by those cold, harsh lights. You turn and look behind. Same view. It's endless. What the hell are you doing there? How do you get out? You check your pockets for a cell phone. You have no pockets, no clothing. Can't stay where you are. Which way to go? Forward or backward? Which way were you facing when you found yourself here? Behind will probably be the way out. But you've already spun around several times. You're no longer sure which direction to take. The concrete under your bare feet is hard and cold. When you exhale, you can see your breath in the glow of that sickly light. You must move. You must make a choice. You start walking. Go a few paces. Nothing changes. No doorway, no exit sign, no hatch in the ceiling, not even a vent in a wall. You stop. Maybe this is the wrong direction. You turn and walk the other way. You rub your arms and shoulders against the cold. You move faster. The tunnel never curves, not even a little. Is it yards long or miles long? Where does it end? It must end. There must be a way out. As you hurry from shadow to light, you call out. Your voice echoes. You hold your breath in hope of some response, but all you can hear is the hum from those fluorescents. You tell yourself, this must be a dream. You slap your own face to wake up. It stings. This is no dream. It's real. You start to run. The lights flicker. They go out.
The safari park.
You're killing me, Larry!
Larry. Fucking Larry.
Larry from That Larry Show.
For men with balls.
Take off your pants.
Larry, get into bed now.
Larry.
Did that opening scare you? Well, it scared hell out of me because I once had that nightmare. Halloween is just a few days off. Is any of the stuff that's supposed to trigger fright on Halloween, is it really scary? Frankenstein was too slow and clumsy to catch anyone. He may have been undead, but he was still human. He could be shot or stabbed. That big head would surely crack if smacked with an Adirondack. And Dracula? It always seemed his victims were, in some way, complicit. Usually women who dug his hypno, look into my eyes, jive, or his Steven Seagal widow's peak. Or maybe it was the fangs. You never know what turned some women on. And what guy could resist some pointy, slow-eyed vampirette? None of the other stuff ever seemed scary either. Ghosts and ghouls and goblins. By the way, what the hell is a goblin? There's a meme out there that labels Greta Thunberg a goblin. Is that accurate? Weird, yeah. Scary? Yeah, not really. For some reason, most of us crave terror in small doses. Especially when we're kids or young adults. Why is that? And somewhere along the line, Hollywood conflated hideous gore with Halloween. Chainsaws and axes in the face and so on. Of course, the odds of meeting that fate are very slim, even in our nutty, violent world. What they don't depict is the shit that really scares people, like being asked what their salary is or why they never got married. Never being the pivotal word, isn't it? It instantly places somebody within the hopeless cases category. Halloween is the oddest of holidays, second only to Christmas in nearly every metric. Spending, partying, decorating. But it's never an actual holiday from school or work. Unless you're a kid attending a Catholic grammar or high school, which I did. Then, you get a fantastic gift. School was in session on October 31st, but November 1st, All Saints Day, that was a holiday, which was great. Halloween was a spirit-lifting lifeboat that saved you from drowning in a sea of homework and tests and encroaching winter horror. It said, do not lose hope. Thanksgiving will arrive, and then it's a sleigh ride to Christmas. I'm so glad I got to do Halloween the right way. That day at school was meaningless. Nobody paid attention to anything as all minds were on that 3 o'clock bell when we'd burst through the doors like bats out of hell and streak home. Few kids had store-bought costumes, so the go-to persona, one I used year in and year out, was a bum. That's what we called them then. The outfit was a snap, basically any old raggy clothing that hadn't yet been thrown away. So it was jeans that had been shredded while playing ball, not in some high-end textile mill. An old t-shirt and a moth-eaten sweater and you were good to go. The change-up from a bum was a pirate. Just put on a knit cap. Button your sleeve below your hand like an amputee and say arr a lot. If you had a buck or two, you could grab a black eye patch at the drugstore. Presto, instant black beard. Did he have a patch? I don't know. Does anyone use the word bum anymore? Even then, the more genteel synonym was hobo. Now it's a homeless person. Back then, they were not ubiquitous as they are now. If you wanted to see a bum or a hobo, you had to visit either a rail yard or Skid Row. That's where they hung out. In New York, Skid Row was a section of downtown Manhattan called the Bowery. It was only a block or three long where guys, and I don't ever recall seeing a female hobo. These guys would congregate because there was an economy there that catered to their tastes and budgets. Those symbiotic businesses were flop houses and dive bars. During the day, they could warm a seat in the bar, swilling cheap beer and rot-gut whiskey. When they'd run out of money, they'd hit the street and panhandle, maybe squeegee a car window or two, earning enough for more hooch and a night in the flop house. How do I know this? Well, I never set foot in a flophouse or a Bowery bar. But in that same neighborhood was New York's famed lighting district. There you could buy lighting fixtures for a fraction of what you'd pay in an uptown department store. So several times, I rode down there with the old man in his Chevy. If you got stuck at red light, you'd find yourself in a pincer movement between two rummies, who'd wipe the windshield with a filthy rag, looking for a handout. My father would roll down the window and give him some money. They were always grateful and polite. Many were clearly ashamed. There was no sense of danger. It was just depressing as hell. There were no news stories of those guys going berserk and shanking people. But then, there was no meth or crack either. There's a documentary about a New York flop house. It's interesting. They'd rent basically a bunk, like in a railroad car or fishing boat. No elevator, just a narrow, crooked staircase. There was one bathroom. Was it per floor or one for the whole place? I don't know. Must have been an experience using that. A manager sat at a caged front desk. It seemed there was something of a social life. The regulars got to know each other and would play cards and such. Few bums ever slept on the street. Tents? Non-existent. The closest thing to a tent you might see was somebody curled up in a refrigerator box. But in winter in New York, you'd freeze to death. America has degenerated. Those hobos were drunks, but few were insane. If they acted out and became violent, cops would drag them to a prison or drunk tank or insane asylum. That no longer happens because the rights of the deranged trump the rights of everyone else. In LA, which has an estimated 60 to 80,000 homeless, the lefty politicians who caused the homeless crisis with their policies, well, those guys blame the economy, high rents, and so on. There's some truth to that, maybe in 5% of cases. But if you talk to cops who have to deal with the homeless directly, they will tell you 95% are drug addicts and or mentally ill. They refuse public shelters because those don't allow drug use. So they'd rather stay high on the street. But back to Halloween. A few times the old man would sit me down in a kitchen chair, turn on the stove, then he'd singe a cork, give me a 5 o'clock shadow with that cork ash, and it looked pretty good. Then I'd lace up my PF Flyers nice and snug, double bag of brown paper sack from the supermarket, and my brother and I would hit the street around 4:30 or 5 p.m. The first piece of Halloween magic was the telepathy among kids. No cell phones, no text messages, no phone calls to coordinate a place and time to connect. Nobody thought of that shit. And if they had, they'd have been labeled sissies. Planning in advance like that, well, that was for girls. But that wasn't the half of it. I had no sisters, but my pals who did would crack me up with tales of how Big Sister would tie up the family phone for hours before she'd settle on a day and time to see a movie with her friends. There would be hours and hours of other bullshit, whose ass looked fattest and whose skirt was short like a slut, who had a face full of zits and who was making out on a park bench with Tommy Bilofuccio and wasn't he a dreamboat? But back to trick-or-treating. We were way more into the treats than the tricks. Not that we'd consume any candy. My brother and I had no sweet tooth. Mom was ahead of her time, very anti-candy. But the old man, he was incorrigible. He'd eat his pancakes floating in a pond of log cabin maple syrup. We were collecting for Dad. First thing we'd do is head for the apartment houses, which were about a half a mile away. We'd race through like brush fire. Each door was only 8 or 9 feet apart. We'd strafe one floor and head for the next. It was efficient as hell. In about half an hour, those bags were overflowing with candy, 8 or 10 pounds worth, easy. Then we'd run home and upend them on the kitchen table, a mountain of candy that would easily see the old man through a year and drive Mom nuts. She'd tell him he'd get diabetes. He never did. He never got fat or had a cavity either. I hated the city and always wanted to experience a rural Halloween. Cornfields and mazes and scarecrows and hayrides and pick-your-own-pumpkin. As a kid in Queens, New York, my mind's eye would generate a harvest moon, crows flying across a twilight sky, bats flitting around, and hoot owls in the trees. After making the candy dump, my brother and I would head back out, and now it was dusk. We'd meet up with other local kids and head off in a gang of 8 or 10, exploring other neighborhoods. Nobody threw any eggs or toilet paper. No one could afford that kind of wasteful shit. The extent of our vandalism was the benign chalk sock. Get a stick of chalk the size of a cucumber. Tie it off in a sock and pound it until it was powder. Then mark anything or anyone with that sock. Autumns in New York were pretty wet. The chalk marks would vanish in the rain. Sometimes we'd have contests at the apartment houses, see who could fling the sock highest and leave a mark way up there in the red brick. Of course, we'd chalk sock the shit out of each other every 2 minutes. Amazing no one had an asthma attack. By 8 o'clock, the public school kids had to go home. They had class the next day. But we good Catholic hellions, we'd continue to ring doorbells until 10 or 11 p.m., sometimes pissing off the occupants of the homes. No one would answer, so we'd ring again. Then, an upstairs window would open.
It's 11 o'clock, get the fuck out of here!
After a reception like that, we knew it was time to call it a night. Mom and Dad would still be up, watching the late news. We'd comb through the candy pile on the table. Sometimes people would throw change in. Some cheap asses would give unwrapped candy corn. Disgusting. One Halloween, I got very hungry and really didn't have a taste for the candy I was carrying, so I walked into a butcher shop and said trick or treat. The guy looked at me like I was nuts. But then he grabbed a liverwurst and a salami and a cleaver. Bam, bam, he chopped off 6 or 7 inches on each and handed them to me. I thanked him, ran outside, sat down at the curb, took out my jackknife, and shared the goodies with my pals. Is there a kid in America today or on the planet who has an experience like that? How did we get to where we are now? Every trick-or-treater must have one or both helicopter parents bodyguarding them 24/7. Some will never know the thrill of knocking on a stranger's door and shouting trick-or-treat. They just walk through a fucking shopping mall.
Hey, Jimmy, let's go see what the Gap has for us. After that, we'll visit Lens Crafters. Spooky, huh?
Seems that trunk-or-treat shit has become a standard. Ooh, that must be a spine-tingling rush. Walk around an asphalt parking lot at noon with Mom and Dad and pick your own Tootsie Roll out of a hatchback Prius. So fun. So safe. Wonder if little goblins and ghouls will have N95 masks beneath their Mickey Mouse masks. Can't be too safe. Better socially distance, too. In fucked up, paranoid Los Angeles, many will. This Halloween's terror du jour is candy laced with fentanyl. And that's a legit concern. But there's an easy fix. Don't eat the fucking candy. Any of it. Your teeth will thank you. Problem solved. But it never was or should have been about damn candy. It was about running around with your pals in the crisp autumn night, dressed as someone or something else, ringing doorbells and collecting stuff without adult supervision. That was the most important part of the holiday. And it seems that's gone. Forever. In Los Angeles, catastrophically fucked up selfish helicopter parents have found a way to further eliminate any sense of adventure or autonomy kids might derive from Halloween. Not only do Mommy and Daddy shadow the kid, Mommy and Daddy also dress in costume, because you're never too old to be a fucking moron. Never too old to elbow into every facet of a kid's life and make a special night created for children to make that
inclusive, so Mommy and Daddy can have a trick-or-treat fun time too.
Hey, costumed Mom and Dad, grow the fuck up. Let the kids be kids. That's the scariest part of Halloween. The parents. They've wrecked it. Is there some remote corner of the world where kids set out with other kids and do Halloween the way I did? I sure hope so. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. This is our 5th, count them, 5 Halloweens together. And I've covered a lot of Halloweens there, like The Halloween I spent at Houdini's grave with my Cosa Nostra pal Tony Spumante. Or Halloween with the Toolbox Killers. That was a chiller. Here's a quick sample.
Trick or treat!
Get off my lawn!
Halloween with the Sunset Slayers. They made Jeff Dahmer look kind of normal. Then there was Larry's Dream Halloween. The thumbnail features perhaps the most pointy chick of all time. There's an easy way to check out all those episodes. Go to thatlarryshow.com and click on the October tab in each year. While you're at the homepage, click the subscribe button so you never miss a show. If you like what you hear, send a link to a friend and leave a 5-star review wherever you download. If you really like what you heard, click the Patreon or PayPal button and join the Take No Shit Dojo. Follow the show between episodes on Twitter, Facebook. You'll find links to those as well as an email address if you want to write, all at thatlarryshow.com. There's even a phone number if you want to leave a voice message. Come hang with me again this coming Wednesday or thereabouts. We'll have another adventure. Until that time, take no shit.